Infendo Radio is on now.
Radio, the best Nintendo podcast on the English-speaking internet. My name is Holly Falmouth, and I will be your host for this evening. And joining me tonight, we have Harrison Milfeld.
Hello, everybody.
We're going to just, you know, kick this thing off. We're doing our usual three-part structure, starting with what we've been playing, moving on to Nintendo news, and ending on our feature. We're going to talk a little bit about the history of Mario Kart and talk about some of our favorite games from the series, some of our favorite items, characters, you know, whatever, features, things like that. So let's just jump right in here and talk about what we've been playing. Harrison, did you have anything that you wanted to mention about what you've been playing this week?
Well, I did, even though this is available on the Wii U right now, but I had been finally finished up Batman Arkham Origins after it was sitting on my desk in its shrink wrap for about a couple months since Christmas, and I finally got around to actually playing it. I finished it this week, and, to think about it, I mean, I'm just going to keep it short and sweet on this one, is that, one reviewer kind of put out, I think from IGN put this out, was, that Batman games are like pizza. Even when they're not great, they're still pretty okay. And I thought that was like, okay, that's fine, you know, but when it came to this one, for some background information, Rocksteady Games, who were responsible for Arkham Asylum, or the excellent Arkham Asylum, and its sequel, Arkham City, were not in hand in this one. They are currently right now doing Arkham Knight, which is going to be released on the Xbox One and PS4 and PC in the coming... this fall. But this one, it's just... I had my worries about it, whatever, knowing as just... it's a prequel, but... it didn't stray too much away from the usual formula that I wasn't really disappointed with my experience, but neither was I blown away like I had with the first two games. I mean, combat system was still kind of intact. That Rocksteady just kind of perfected it over like two games. That was one thing I worried about when the first Arkham game came out. I was wondering how is this going to work, and lo and behold, it was a streamless combat system with combat system with good combos, upgrades, and so on and so forth. But this one, it's just, they didn't really do much to kind of, branch it out a little bit. There's an ability that you get in the game where you, from one of the Batman villains, the Electrocutioner, which is basically his shock gloves. And when you're in the middle of a fight or so, you can, you can push down both on the bumper, the bumpers of each of the analog stick to activate the shock gloves. And while you're facing off with maybe 10 or so thugs around you, you can just kind of get a one hit kill to each, one hit knockout to each of them, whatever. And it just makes everything a little too easy, probably about past the halfway point. But as far as story, it's. The story revolves around, basically, Black Mask, one of the more underrated Batman villains, is that he has about 8 assassins that are putting a bounty, a $50 million bounty on Batman. And you face all these different Batman villains, lesser-known Batman villains from the DC Universe, like Copperhead, Firefly, and the usual staples, Croc and Bane. But once the story kind of progresses a little bit more, the whole bounty storyline, whatever, just kind of fizzles out near the end. It's never really resolved, or it's not really touched up again. It's just kind of tossed to the side. But to kind of close things out on this, because this is a game that I just kind of once it came out, I was it's enjoyable. I still find it to be kind of the weakest out of the three current Arkham games, but It just satisfied me to the point knowing that, it didn't, with a new developer at hand tackling this, it didn't really sink it to a new low, personally. But yet, when you're playing with a Batman game since open world, you have all these side quests and side missions, a lot of them are very various busy work, and they don't really entice you much to actually kind of go further unless you're getting trophies or achievements. But overall, Batman Arkham Origins was an interesting ride, yet it leaves me hoping that what Rocksteady has learned from the past, their first two Arkham games, what they're going to be doing with Arkham Knight. And before this podcast, when I mentioned to you I was the one playing this, you said you're not a fan of Batman.
No, I'm not. And in fact, I was actually thinking of just a billion questions that I could ask. But my first question for you actually is, so which system did you play this game on?
Wii U? My 360.
Okay, but it does have like a Wii U port?
Yes, it did. That came out at the same time as these, not like what we had with Arkham City, which was the director's cut, like the armored edition, which released around the same time the Wii U launched.
Well, I guess my other question is, okay, so there's three Arkham games, and the first two were what now?
The first two were developed by Rocksteady Games.
Okay, and what were they called?
Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. First one came out in 2009, and the second one came out in 2011.
All right.
It seems like you're missing out on some of these. You're figuring like, I want to try these out.
I kind of, you know, I'm kind of feeling like that a little bit, but I guess my next question would be like, what's the appeal of these games? What is the genre? What are you doing in these games? What is the focus? Like, is the story a big focus, or are they just action games?
Well, story is for the first two games especially the first two games, a major focus on them. I mean, the reason I don't say for this one is that it has a decent story at hand. It kind of strays away from the main point and it's kind of an afterthought. But it kind of goes into a new story altogether, and what the beginning story was, it's never really, loose ends are never tied up. First Arkham Asylum game, which was written by Paul Dini, who is known for writing the majority of Batman the Animated Series episodes, penned that, and I believe he did pen Arkham City. I'm not sure, but I know he's not going to be penning the script to story to Arkham Knight when Rocksteady's developing now. But as far as like what this is, it's an open world action adventure game, and third person, and you've given this environment for Batman. You just use all of his abilities and travel around, whatever, and just go to various different points to the story. I wouldn't say it's so much like a Batman in the GTA universe. It's just, it's kind of like that. I mean, well, even though GTA is the standard for like open world/sandbox games, but this one, you're really not given a lot, like in Arkham Asylum, Arkham Origins, a lot to do as far as, like I said, with the side missions. It's just kind of trivial, busy work. It's not, it doesn't, again, like I said, it doesn't entice you to actually complete these unless you really want all those achievements.
Okay. I think that pretty much, kind of gives me an idea of what they would be. I could ask some more questions, but they would basically require very simple answers, I'm thinking. Because I just don't know. I mean, so you're Batman.
Yes, you are Batman.
Just completing missions using his gadgets and his abilities?
Well, yeah, the story is driven based on objectives, and once you complete one objective, you go to the next one, and the area of Gotham. This one, you can fast travel with the Batwing and such, but I never really used it that much because you have to unlock you have to disable some devices that won't allow you to land the Batwing in certain areas. I never really delved into that. And one thing I want to add is when I finished this game, it kind of shook me by surprise that it ended where it ended, because I just assumed when I got to one of these areas of the game, whatever, I was like, okay, I probably have some more to do, and then just drops me like that. I'm like, oh, okay, that's it. Oh, I mean, I enjoyed that, but I was expecting a little bit more. I mean, it probably has more to do with the fact that I did not do any of the side missions.
Okay. So I guess I could have some more questions. This will be the last one, I promise. Okay, so what kind of gameplay variety is there? I mean, are there racing segments? There's hand-to-hand combat versus projectile combat?
There's hand-to-hand. I mean, there's everything. There's no driving sections in there. I mean, that's what Arkham Knight's going to do, where you can finally drive the Batmobile. But no, combat's just hand-to-hand, where you were able to score combos with, like, beating up, like, the just the various criminals and thugs in Gotham City. And there, you can use any of, like, Batman's abilities, be it his, be it bomb, like, you know, triggering bombs, or even his grappling hook to grab, like, certain objects, like a propane tank, whatever, and make it explode to make it explode, but, or that, or grab enemies towards you and just knock them out. But, no, it's just, it's hand-to-hand combat,
Okay, it doesn't sound too bad,
It's not. I thought the last question would say, like, okay, like, if you were Batman, no.
Yes, let's go into that. No, I'm kidding. I wouldn't be able to add much to that conversation anyway, I'm afraid. So, there are three Batman games currently, Batman Arkham Origins being the most recent, and the one that you are talking about currently. For, like, a Wii U owner like myself, who doesn't also own, you know, like, a PlayStation or an Xbox, I can only play Arkham Origins and Arkham City Armored Edition, is that correct?
Yeah, right, the as far as the previous games, this one and Origins, but again, Origins is a prequel.
Well, I think that's enough knowledge for me right now. I might just overflow if we talk about any more, because I'm just so not up to speed with this kind of thing. So I guess I'll just talk about what I've been playing. I've been playing my usuals. I've talked about, I feel like the last five episodes or so, I've mentioned Bravely Default as just a game that I have been working on, but I haven't actually mentioned very much about the game. So I'm just going to start by talking a little bit about Bravely Default. I think I'm maybe a little over halfway through the game, though I can't be certain. When everyone says stuff like, oh, I'm halfway through the game, they sound so confident. And I wonder, like, how can you be confident when you don't even really know, you know, where the game might take you after these four main kind of segments in the game? Because in Bravely Default, you're basically just kind of traveling from one land to the next, because there are these four, like, elemental crystals that you have to awaken to basically save the world, because the world is falling apart because this darkness has overtaken these crystals. So there are just, you know, four main lands that you go to, as far as I can tell. And you just have to, you know, complete side missions to unlock more jobs for your characters. Then there is, you know, like, the main storyline that you can go through. You can actually skip some of the side quests that unlock new jobs to just, you know, go through the main storyline if you just really want to get through it, which, honestly, I haven't been super impressed by this game, and so I sometimes just want to, you know, get through the game, but, you know, sometimes I have to buckle down and do some grinding, which is not my favorite thing in the world. But, yeah, going back to, you know, the four crystals, I have awakened two of them, and so there being four, I figure I'm halfway through, right? But really, I don't know. There could be something more after I unlock the fourth crystal, or awaken. As far as, you know, my impressions on the game, they're not entirely favorable, like I mentioned. I was expecting a lot from this game. I was expecting a lot from the story. I was expecting a lot from the gameplay. And, yeah, in some ways it delivers, but in other ways it just doesn't. Like, story-wise, I think the story is pretty interesting, but not super interesting. The voice acting is pretty... Oh.
That's one thing I've been impressed right now with the more that's kind of going to Nintendo published titles, like, you know, even Fire Emblem Awakening and Kid Icarus Uprising, that we're just getting more of these that are just not text-based dialogue, but this is just, you know, you actually full-fledged voice acting into these games.
Yeah, Bravely Default is, you know, the bulk of the text is voice acted. The voice acting, one of the big problems with the voice acting is that it just feels so slow and so monotonous, and... It's like every single time you encounter a character, they have this big, huge speech that they have to give you. And sometimes I'm just sitting there holding my 3DS up, listening to this speech that I, you know, didn't really ask for or want, or, you know, it doesn't even have that much to do with the story. In addition, a lot of the voice acting is a little cheesy, I guess, is how I would describe it.
I haven't played it, but I've heard that's one thing I've heard from everybody.
Yeah. Well, it's true. Not in all cases. There are a couple of voice acting performances in the game that actually stand out as pretty good. And it's not like you would know all the characters, but one of my favorite voices, for those of you who have actually played the game, is Idea. She is kind of, her character is kind of just, she gets angry easily, but she, I think she's just kind of packed with emotion in general, so she'll get angry really easily. She also gets scared kind of easily and things like that. And her voice acting is actually quite well done. Same with Ringabel. And they, with your party of four characters, they're kind of like a couple. And then Agnes and, what's his name, Tiz, are the other couple, I guess you could say. So I have definitely found Ringabel and Idea's little storylines to be a lot more interesting, just because their voice acting is so good. And I think that the characters' personalities really shine, whereas Tiz and Agnes are just kind of, meh, generic kind of characters. But, you know, the game, it has strengths, and really the strengths lie in two things for me. One is, like, the combat system. It's a turn-based RPG, and there's actually quite a lot of strategy involved. First of all, there's, like, these jobs that you can assign to your characters, of course. Different abilities, like support abilities and abilities that actually do something in battle. And there's also the Brave and Default mechanic, which, you know, in most games, in most turn-based RPGs, you can tell your character to defend one turn, or you can tell them to attack, whatever. And I just thought that Brave and Default would work kind of like that, but it actually, I can't really describe how, but it actually does add a lot to the combat system. And it is very fun to go through, you know, a nice tough battle. Grinding is pretty boring because I feel like you can just, you know, get through these enemies really quick and just, you know, level up. But when you get to, like, a boss-type character, the battles actually become, you know, strategic and a lot of fun. That is the first kind of strong point in this game. The second strong point to me is the art direction. This game is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's like these backgrounds, these environments that you find yourselves in, they just look like they're, you know, like hand-painted with love and attention and detail.
Yeah, it's beautiful, especially for a 3DS game.
Yes. When it comes to, you know, like super realistic graphics, okay, yeah, those games are good, but I actually prefer games like this where they just have this really pretty world that, you know, has a lot of attention to detail, it has a lot of personality, it has a lot of, like, life to it. And these, you know, like, paintings, these backgrounds that you find yourself in Bravely Default, they're just sometimes breathtaking. And kind of in relation to that, I haven't actually mentioned the soundtrack, which is another thing that I think that this game does really well. The soundtrack is very fantastic. And as far as Bravely Default goes, that's kind of how things are going in my game so far.
How far are you into as far as length? Like, you know, like, time-wise?
Let's see. I think I'm 31 hours something minutes into it, so a little over 31 hours. So, yeah, it's a pretty time-consuming game. But I spent a lot of time grinding, and now I find that whenever I want to actually progress through the story, I can get through it pretty quickly, and I don't need to do as much grinding. So I think I've already done, like, most of the grinding that I'll probably need to do for a while, so I don't know if that's inaccurate. I mean, I'm like halfway through the story, but I'm 31 hours in. I don't think that means that I'm going to end up clocking in at like 62 hours in this game necessarily. But yeah, that's Bravely Default. Another game that I have actually been putting quite a lot of time into is Advance Wars. And I believe you've played this one, Harrison, right?
It's been a long while. I have first two games in the series. I probably had a lot of time dedicated to them. First Advance Wars and Advance Wars 2: Black Hole Rising, which I hope the second one gets released soon, because as one of the others, I never did finish. But
was there a DS one too?
Yes, there were two DS ones, and neither of them I did not get a chance to play.
I thought there were like two games total, and that was it. So I'm way off. Yeah, and also I'm brand new to the series, obviously, as well. So I'm having a really good time. Last time I talked about Advance Wars, I had just gotten through the tutorial stages, basically. So I was just getting ready to embark on the main campaign. And I've actually made quite a bit of progress in the main campaign, I feel like, anyway. And it has been a ton of fun. It's like I have mentioned before, in Advance Wars, you don't level up your characters, so there's no grinding involved. You know, it's all just pure strategy. And I have really enjoyed that about this game. Although, you know, that kind of makes Fire Emblem, especially Fire Emblem Awakening, where you can turn off the permadeath feature, it kind of makes that game more accessible. But that's okay. I mean, I can't play this game. I can't play Advance Wars at night because my brain is just fried at night. And so
I can't play Advance Wars at night because I'm still playing my first generation Game Boy Advance where the backlight, there's no backlight.
Oh, that would be awesome. I wish I had one of those someday, maybe. But yeah, it is literally because I just don't feel like thinking, like using my head this much at night. And so I'm kind of a morning person, so I will actually set aside a little bit of time in the mornings to play this game. And then I play Bravely Default at night because that game doesn't always require a lot of brain power, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, Bravely Default versus Advance Wars, pretty big contrast there.
Now,
I'm enjoying both of them.
Well, since you've had experience playing, you know, Fire Emblem Awakening, this is done by Intelligent Systems, I mean, was jumping into it pretty, you know, I mean, seamless for you?
I wouldn't say seamless. I mean, I spent a lot of time getting through the field training stages. I actually looked at my activity log after I was finally done with my field training, and I had clocked in about 5 hours, actually, just to learn how to play the game. And so it's actually been very difficult, and I was expecting to see more similarities between Advance Wars and Fire Emblem. To me, the only real similarities are that they, you know, take place on grid-based maps. That's kind of it. I mean, there's strengths and weaknesses in both games, but they're just set up so differently. Yeah, it was actually quite difficult for me. I mean, having experience with, like, a strategy game like Fire Emblem where you're battling on grid maps, that definitely, I think, has helped. But in general, Advance Wars has been pretty difficult for me to grasp. But I'm doing okay. I got my first S rank recently, so that was exciting. So, yeah, really enjoying that one.
If there were to, since with your experience in it, if there were to, say, be announced a 3DS version of this, would you probably be wanting to pick it up?
I would definitely keep my eye on it. Right now, it's really hard for me to say right now that I would definitely buy this certain game, no matter what game it is, you know, except for the big ones like Super Mario, or what am I thinking? Super Smash Bros. And Mario Kart 8. Because right now, I just feel like I have such a huge backlog that I really need to start making some progress on that. And I also want to save some money. And so I'm holding off on buying a lot of things until Mario Kart 8, that is. And there are a few, you know, games that I feel like are completely essential that I need to buy this year. But, you know, I skipped out on Child of Light, which I really, I've seen so many things that make it look like such a great game that I just... It has been a real test of self-discipline for me to not get Child of Light. But then I think about all those games in my backlog that I really need to get through, and I'm not too worried about it.
I mean, I've been wanting to see Child of Light, though, a little bit. But, you know, this month is going to be very bad on as far as, my budget when it comes to Mario Kart 8 and games I've missed out on, like I've been putting off for a while. Like, for instance, A Link Between Worlds. So, yeah, I'll finally be able to get onto that soon, hopefully.
Yeah, if you're a Zelda fan, and I know you are, I think you will love that game. I adored it, to say the least. But moving on, our first bit of Nintendo news, actually, is kind of related to a pair of games, one of which I would actually quite like to get. They come out this November. Maybe you have heard of them. They are Pokemon Omega Ruby and Pokemon Alpha Sapphire, the long-anticipated remakes to Pokemon Ruby and Sapphire. So, Harrison, what are you thinking about these games?
Can I just say, like I said, with the X and Y, it was like, this was like my first Pokemon game I bought in like a little more than 10 years. I barely jumped into Ruby and Sapphire.
Me too, actually.
with things like the Pokemon Bank open and, you know, these being released, I mean, they're going to be moneymakers regardless, you know, even though despite there being remakes, and I assume they're going to be done the same style of what X and Y are, correct?
Yeah, I don't think that has necessarily been confirmed, but I would be absolutely shocked and disappointed and appalled. I'm trying to think of a list of words that I can use to describe my feelings if they didn't do these games in 3D.
I would not, yeah, but it's, no, I'm a little excited for these right now. I mean, it's just, I think it's just more for just to kind of get more steam to the 3DS, knowing how things have been kind of going for the company, like Nintendo in general, but these as well. I mean, even though Pokemon has not been at the height of its, you know, at the height of its phenomenon when it first came here to the States in, like, you know, the late 90s, it's still a profitable franchise for, like, for Nintendo. And to release these games out here as well, I mean, it's not surprising. They do these things like that.
Yeah, I think that we were all kind of expecting some sort of remake of Ruby and Sapphire at some point, just, you know, because of the history, we've got Fire Red and Leaf Green, and then, of course, what are the second generation's ones called? Soul Silver and Heart Gold. So yeah, I think we all would have been surprised if we just never got some remakes of Ruby and Sapphire. But yeah, for people like you and me, I mean, I currently own Pokemon Emerald, which is also Generation 3. But I've never, you know, I think I played, I played one of the three games, maybe through to, like, the second gym or something like that, but there are just so many Pokemon games that I didn't really experience that it has been really difficult for me to, you know, get through all of them. And so, you know, these remakes will be very good for those who missed out on the third generation, which could be a fair amount of people, so... So, are you kind of planning on getting these games, or maybe putting them on your Christmas wish list?
We're talking about, Way for Christmas. No, I think right now, since a bunch of my household, we did buy versions of both of X and Y, I think we may will go this route so we can actually, you know, trade Pokemon. But, I could definitely be seeing this right now, if there's more added features aside from just a new fresh coat of paint.
Yeah, it's funny because, the first Pokemon game I really got into was my copy of Pokemon Fire Red, which technically is kind of part of Generation 3 because, you know, Generation 3 came out as in Ruby and Sapphire, and then they re-released Pokemon Red and Blue as Pokemon Fire Red and Leaf Green, actually. They decided to go with the green route this time. But I just never really got into Ruby and Sapphire, unfortunately, and so... I'm thinking it's probably likely that I will get one of these. So if you could choose which one that you got, which would you go with? Omega Ruby or Alpha Sapphire?
What did I go originally? I think it was Ruby that I originally went with.
Okay. So I think that these names are kind of an interesting thing. Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. But I don't know which one I would go with. I was never a huge fan of Kyogre and... what is the red one called? I think we used to pronounce it Godron, but I don't think it's spelled like that. So, you know, whatever you want to call it. So, I don't know. We'll just see which one. I don't know. I usually like to go with whichever version of the game I think will be less popular. And so, you know, out of Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, whatever one is less popular, I'll probably just go with that one just because, I mean, there's not a huge difference between the two, obviously. But moving on to our next bit of Nintendo news, Nintendo has kind of, or Satoru Iwata at like an investor briefing.
Debbie Downer in investor briefing, as I like to call it, or one that's trying to calm everybody down. I mean, more on that later.
This is actually pretty good news to me. So Nintendo is kind of planning on having this NFC figure campaign thing. NFC figures, for those of you who don't know, NFC stands for Near Field Communications. And if you have a gamepad and you always wondered what that little, there's like a couple of squares, there's like just a little blank space on the gamepad controller on the bottom left with a couple of squares drawn onto it. That's actually the Near Field Communicator, basically, and it has the ability to communicate with, you know, just like little toys. As far as right now, we actually have one game that I know of that uses these, and it's a really not that great of a game. What is it even called? Pokemon Rumble U. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, the one, their attempt at this, like at near an NFC title.
Yeah, and it's sad because it's a really neat concept, the whole NFC thing, but to have like, or for Nintendo's first game that actually utilizes it, Pokemon Rumble U, it's just not that great of a game, and so I don't think it got a lot of attention. So I think Nintendo is going to try to turn that around. So they'll be releasing these NFC figures. I'm guessing, you know, just Mario ones, Zelda ones, possibly, you know, Metroid, Star Fox, all those other ones. And these will reportedly work with, like, a variety of games. So say you have this little Mario figure that works with your NFC communicator. It will actually possibly work with, you know, like, multiple titles from Nintendo, which kind of begs the question, what kinds of games are going to be using these? We don't have to wait too long to find out, because at this E3, Nintendo will actually be announcing some of the Wii U games that will utilize these, and so that's kind of exciting. So Harrison, what kind of games are you expecting that will utilize these?
For those who don't know, just before I add to it, is Nintendo actually had the chance to partner with the people at Skylander, like for Skylanders to actually put this out onto the market, but Nintendo declined. And this one, I feel like they may go the route of what we see right now with Disney Infinity. I mean, you have these memorable characters that people know back in their heads. But this one, as far as, like, gameplay-wise, I'm not sure how to, because I'm not familiar as far as playing with Infinity or even Skylanders to actually get into it. But everything's out there as far as packs out there. I mean, who knows? You could still bring in the possibility of, like, Sega characters, even Capcom characters, into this if there's a good partnership. But as far as a game, I have not the slightest idea. This could probably do something that could make them, like, you know, good financials for Nintendo's part if it's done right. I mean, what about you, Holly?
I agree. I think that Nintendo is really trying to market towards kids now. I mean, at first, the Wii U was supposed to be that, you know, system that brought back the hardcore audience, but it didn't really work out that way. And so I think that Nintendo has really shifted toward targeting children. And so I think I think something that Iwata mentioned was that they want to put these figures out there to increase awareness, brand awareness, and to have, you know, like toys, to be able to put like little Nintendo figurines in the toy section. I think that will really, you know, get kids' attention, and that will hopefully lead them to realizing like, oh, these work with the Wii U, now I want a Wii U. And so I think that they could actually be a very good strategy for Nintendo. We'll see how it works out, but as far as games go, I'm almost thinking that maybe Super Smash Bros. For Wii U will utilize this somehow. For example, with Kid Icarus Uprising, you had like these AR idol cards, they called them, and idols in Kid Icarus Uprising are almost like the same thing as trophies in Super Smash Bros. And so if you had a certain AR card, you could, like, scan it, and you could get that idol in the game. So I'm actually thinking that maybe some of these figures will work with Super Smash Bros. Like, you can buy a figure, scan it into the game through the near field communicator, and get, like, a trophy for it. I think that would actually, it's kind of small, but I think that would actually work fairly well. So that's just a thought. Other than that, I pretty much got nothing. So I'm kind of the same on that. But, you know, it's exciting. It's just another thing to look forward to for this year's E3. We'll kind of find out a little bit more about that, and should be fun to learn about. Moving on, though, Nintendo has had to kind of apologize to a certain fan group that has kind of complained about the fact that Tomodachi Life will not include, I guess you could say, the option of same-sex marriage. So, Harrison.
More in another bit of news, because this, I felt like this has probably been one of Nintendo's worst, bad PR weeks in quite some time. I think probably even leading up to the whole Smash Evo thing. But this one, for everybody want to explain, is that Tamagotchi Life, you know, the life simulator that's coming out for the 3DS in North America, being finally released in North America and Europe in early June, is, you know, life simulator where you can actually create your own little lives, whatever, and have marriage, like, companionships in the game and so on and so forth. And one thing that they brought up into the translated version was that there was not an option to have, you know, same-sex couples into this game, which, of course, for the Japanese version, the only way it was accessed was through a glitch. Now, this brought up a lot of a lot of backlash from the LGBT community, gamers and media alike, was the fact that Nintendo opted not to include it in there, but also it was their initial statement on it. And I don't have it on me right now, but their initial statement saying that they were not trying to play social commentary or a social statement or anything like that into the game, yet many took the words as tone-deaf because the fact that they were neglectful to actually not see this, like, a design oversight in this. And that, it's the fact that they claimed that this was not social commentary or social statement of any kind, yet the original statement and what they did was kind of a social statement as well, or political commentary of any type. Yet, a day later, Nintendo did offer a apology saying that they wanted to offer entertainment for anyone, everyone. That statement alone kind of cleared things up into it, and it shows where they wanted to say that they couldn't change, I guess, the design out of it because it's already gone gold, but they said that, in future installments, they would include it. And I don't want to get too into the whole same-sex debate because, not to say it's important, but the fact that it's just, this is an issue that I kind of came up to me as personal to me because I am a large family myself. I have two gay cousins, and both of which I love to death, and, would do anything for, especially for rights or their own right to marry. And it's the backlash from certain members of the gaming community, I think there was an article from Polygon, which kind of upset me, from a woman who was calling Nintendo basically just bigoted. And yet, at that point, I kind of stopped reading it, okay. It's not like they have an agenda where they're trying to stay away from, not have this opportunity for, same-sex couples or even say those who are gay out there to actually enjoy this game. No, it's something that they even, I wouldn't say forgot to include. It's just, it's gotten blown out of proportion. The original, once the Nintendo statement first came out, it lit the internet on fire. And when it came to it, it's just, you're looking at something that take for instance, Harvest Moon. There isn't an option for that yet. I would like to see something like this, but it's just something where I'm not trying to get all, fired up about. But there have been demonstrations online about this. I remember I saw one where it showed Mario and Luigi making it, kissing. And by the way, people who are posting that photo, I understand your support for same-sex marriage or even representation. But you do realize Mario and Luigi are brothers in character form. So please stop that. You can use anybody else as far as the characters, but just you're doing them related. But I digress. It's an issue that, be it media, that they just wanted to kind of get onto the company, wreck more into the company. I mean, again, I still egg on Nintendo for the original statement because it was just worded badly and just, began to be a PR nightmare, which luckily is what the apology kind of corrected. I mean, I don't know what your views on this right now are, Holly, but, what do you have to say about this?
Well, I definitely agree with a lot of the things that you have said. I too have relatives who are gay, and but at the same time, this whole thing, they kind of made it into such a huge deal. You mentioned Harvest Moon. There's also The Sims. I really loved The Sims 2 for many years. Man, I was kind of addicted to that game. But I don't believe that same-sex couples were an option in that game, and yet I don't remember any serious backlash against that. Maybe it was the timing, but But yeah, I just think that this is a little bit too extreme. And actually, I just want to take, we have one comment on the post that you posted on this on Infendo, and it's from Mike as a Poet. And I just want to kind of mention something that he says. He says, I'm a strong supporter as well, as in I'm a strong supporter of the L, what is the acronym? It's too long for me sometimes. LGBT?
Lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual.
Yeah. LGBT or TB, whatever. So he's, you know, he supports that as well. But he thinks, and these are his words, I think this entire debacle was stupid on the petitioner's part. I'm sorry the quirky, humor-filled game with the robotic voices that was advertised with Bill Trinan's face flying off into outer space didn't allow you to marry same-sex couples. Shame on Nintendo for making a life simulator that doesn't simulate life. Wait, that's it. It's a silly laugh-out-loud what-the-freak game. So, and he goes on to say this was not a battle that needed energy wasted on it. And I kind of agree with that. I mean, you know, Nintendo will... I think Nintendo is perfectly fine making, you know, an effort in the future to make games that better represent all players, as they say in their quote. And that's just fine for me. I'm okay with that. And the thing with Tomodachi Life is that I think that the couples will just kind of automatically pair up. And so if they had the option of same-sex couples in this game, like, say my character, like my me character, ended up with another female character, but I'm not gay, and so that would just, to me, be a little bit weird. And so it just all depends on the implementation. If that were a possibility, then that would kind of, you know, put me off, and that would make me think, like, what the heck? So, you know, I think Nintendo in the future will be able to implement this in a way, though, that satisfies everybody, including those of us who aren't gay, which, you know, I'm a supporter. Like I said, I have family members who are gay, but yeah, it just depends on the implementation in the particular game. And this game, you know, it works just fine, if you ask me.
It is, and, you know, it's, what do you expect, especially for something to, I mean, a lot of people are blaming, like, Nintendo of America for this, I mean, but no, it's like, it was Nintendo Japan who developed this. It was NOA who was like, who translated and localized this thing. They have less power of actually putting something like that into the game, and I'm sure maybe by design you could probably fix it with a patch, but it's just, it's gone gold. We can't do anything about it now until after it's released. And, but it comes, to, yeah, it, again, it just comes down just to how Nintendo handled the situation. When they handled the first with their original statement, yeah, it was bad. That was the thing I was a little upset about. But when they apologized for it, yeah, you know, it was something I was like, you guys should have said this the first time. That was it. And since then, it's just, it's an issue that's rounded around a social issue that I care about, but to something that I really feel like is just, again, like I said, blown out of proportion. Here is, yeah, here is Nintendo's, like, horribly botched explanation, basically, like, before their apology. And I'm going to try and read this, whatever, with, like, you know, the short version. Alright, Nintendo has said, Nintendo never intended to make any form of social commentary with the launch of Tomodachi Life. The relationship options in a game represent a playful alternate world rather than a real-life simulation. We hope that all our fans will see that Tomodachi Life was intended to be a whimsical and quirky game, and that we were absolutely not trying to provide social commentary. Yeah, that's a short version of it right now. That's not all of it, but that's apparently what that got everybody upset about.
So there you have it. At least they apologized afterward and gave us some foresight into the future, you know, possible titles that will... And it's like, you know, in Nintendo's own words again, better represent all players. So, you know, we'll see where that takes them. Harrison, did you have anything further to say on the Tomodachi Life controversy?
Well, the last thing I'm going to add to it is just like, you know, for everybody out there who understand, you know, in this country right now that, you know, that's even when the first domino fell years ago, whatever, like a few years ago when states allowing gay marriage. And since then, it's just kind of continuing to grow, which I feel like, you know, we're a few years away from probably just, you know, looking back on this, thinking, like, why we were against this. But in the case, you know, with Tomodachi Life, though, this is just kind of another small chapter in this whole saga where kind of a first I've seen in a while in the gaming industry that I hope we just look back on and realize, you know, at least they apologize to it. And, you know, hopefully with even like an outcry like that, I mean, it just kind of showing, I guess, Nintendo is listening. I mean, what happened with the Evo situation, like the Nintendo Smash Brothers Evo tournament situation, where they allowed that to actually be played at the, well, be streamed. In the say the case of Tamagotchi Life, I mean, I guess that just shows the power of the internet out there. But again, I think that's what it came into Nintendo's heart to actually realize that it's this is something, you know, we should have said before, and we understand that people who are same-sex couples or gay that want to be treated equally on there, and I understand. It just, you know, when it comes to game development like that, it just, you gotta get over that hurdle first, and then once it comes into it, everything's fine. But looking at it, it's something that I don't want to really get too much wound out about it, because I realize I remain neutral to it. But in the end, I mean, I applaud you, Nintendo, for actually, you know, making the right statement to what you guys should originally did on this bit of news that popularize the internet a little bit.
A lot to be angry about, I guess, but I think Nintendo has patched things up. Certainly with me, I mean, I'm pretty neutral as well on the whole situation. So, our last bit of news has to do with Nintendo's reported financial losses, and because I am not really up to speed on this, I mean, Harrison sent me an article which I am looking at now, but I'm still, you know, not exactly, what's the word? I don't know. Up to speed. I'll just stick with that.
You're informed on this one, so.
Yeah, so Harrison, I'll just let you take this over.
Well, as you know, like when we were talking about the Nintendo investors briefing with their announced plans for this year for E3 or Quality of Life, and, well, just we talked about the NFC titles and figurines. Before the investor meeting, whatever that took place, which I did follow on Twitter, whatever, thankfully through somebody who was translating Japanese, Nintendo had posted their financial results ending from March 31st, 2014. For the third straight year, the company has operated at a loss. So, and all the projections that they were released in January 2014 did not meet expectations. What was it? Total worldwide sales were $5.6 billion against a revised forecast of $5.79 billion. This, of course, was lowered from $9 billion back from April 2013. Looking more at these numbers, net income was slightly up on the back of favorable exchange rates. Nintendo had predicted a 245.4 million. Loss, but it ended with $227.9 billion. So, as far as an operating loss that Nintendo had, well, okay, for the total operating loss for the last 3 years, $1.18 billion. Now, here's the thing that they mentioned in like these results that they had talked about. They blamed this on, you know, the slow sales of the Wii U. So that shows that they're not putting that aside, you know, saying that it's a changing market and smartphones that are keeping it down, but they realize their console's not performing well. Now, we've all seen these kind of type of results, like financial results. It seems like it's becoming the norm, especially with the Wii U struggling sales, and even the 3DS did not meet their sales marks this year. Looking more at the numbers, so Nintendo sold about 2.72 million Wii Us against a January 2014 goal of 2.8 million for the year. The target was supposed to be 9 million, which, of course, at that point, I think when they announced that, I felt like that was a bit of a wishful thinking on that part, because it's even when you add games like what they had for fall, Legend of Zelda, like Wind Waker HD and Super Mario 3D World, when you had those games which sold practically pretty well, but they didn't move the expected units that they wanted to do and create a larger attach rate. Again, with these sales, it's just, you bring up the idea of the fact that it's like, okay, Nintendo is in trouble right now. I mean, their console, to be exact. I mean, this, I feel like, again, one console that undersells and becomes a flop, whatever, is not going to bring the company down. Yet they have been burning through their war chest, it seems like, the last 3 years. I mean, they still have a plentiful one up there to actually, you know, play around with. You get the usual responses from people like, you know, they should go third party, you should do this, yada, yada, or third party, you know, close out the system. Iwata mentioned in his investor briefing about this that, about, like, the idea of just abandoning the console, like the Wii U, and starting a new, like, bringing out a new one that's up to par with the current gens. Iwata's response, I think, that was to this is that, I mean, look at, I'm paraphrasing, look at Sega, that's what got them in trouble at first, you know, with the peripherals that they had with the Genesis to keep it alive against the Super Nintendo, with Sega CD and 32X. You had the botched launch of the Sega Saturn, which was discontinued early, and which led to the Dreamcast, which is a fine console, like, you know, one of the more, probably the more underrated console, like, home consoles I've ever owned, but of course met on a timely end just because of a few factors, being it was easy to pirate from, had no DVD player, and it came, went up straight against the PlayStation 2 release a year later. Now, it's, looking back at this, though, what does this mean to you, Holly, though? I mean, to me, this was expected on my part, but it kind of goes to the forward to show that they need to kind of hit a home run at E3 to enlist some trust into their user base.
Yeah, I usually don't like to dabble too much in this kind of thing, and I just don't find it super interesting to get into this kind of thing, because, I mean, everyone's just throwing solutions out, you know, supposed solutions out there, and, I mean, who knows what the real solution is? Who understands Nintendo? Who understands business enough to really know what the solution is? I mean, some people, like, are really adamant about firing Iwata, and I just think to myself, like, is that a viable option? And so I just, you know, have questions constantly running through my head, which makes it really difficult for me to really come to any personal conclusions. But I'm looking at this article, and near the bottom, it says, Nintendo has not set ambitious goals for itself for the year ending March 31st, 2015. So Nintendo's current goals for, you know, a number of units sold, they're currently not, you know, that huge. And to me, that kind of, I don't know, does it say that Nintendo is admitting defeat? Does it say that Nintendo is probably going to release a whole new system?
No. This is more media, like, you know, media outlets kind of hinting at that. This is just showing that Nintendo really need a boost from their home console to actually get away from a loss, even though they did. I wanted to mention in his investor briefing that they are no longer operating the Wii U at a loss anymore, which I found quite surprising. But it's... No, this is just a third straight year where the company's just trying to get back on its feet. I mean, they're a profitable company, but when it comes to their home console right now, they're just struggling, and they're just struggling getting out the door trying to figure something out. But it's... No, it's not, I wouldn't say they're admitting defeat. They're just admitting the fact that, like they did back in January when other sales reports came out from the holidays, which were underwhelming, they're realizing, yeah, we're in a bad spot right now with their home console, and we're doing our best to correct this.
Yeah. I find it interesting, though. I mean, Nintendo started out, especially with the Wii U, pretty ambitious on expected sales, and then they lower that, and they don't even meet the lowered expectations, and now they're, you know, like, lowering it again, and I don't know if that just means that they're being humble, or... I just really got nothing on this. I kind of hope that... I mean, maybe they have currently pretty low expectations for the next 12 months or so. So maybe they're just, I don't know, expecting to sell less so that when they sell more, they'll be happier or something. It's like I say, I mean, just so many questions and thoughts go through my head when I think about these things that I just can't, you know, think of a clear answer.
It's, like I said, it's like, you know, it comes down to what sells your hardware, great software. And that's always been Nintendo's, like, case for all their past consoles. It's like, once you have good software, people will buy your console. It's just they need more of that out there. And, you know, does it have to do with the fact that, again, the name of the console, the fact that the Wii U handle, like the Wii U gamepad makes it seem like it's a peripheral? A lot of things go into that. But it's, one has to realize that they have to get better with this home console. 3DS is solid. The worst of 3DS has been long over. It just, will this year finally see the Wii U finally get off that, you know, that huge hole it's put itself in?
Yeah. You know, when it comes to software, I think most, like, probably Sony and Microsoft depend a ton on third-party developers. And obviously third-party developers are really staying away from the Wii U. And that means that, you know, the variety of software that the Wii U needs is not there, which means that nobody's going to buy it, which means the install base is not going to grow enough to entice third parties. And so to me, it just seems like a vicious cycle. And so I don't know. I mean, I think Nintendo has great software. I mean, Zelda, Pikmin 3, Super Mario 3D World, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which I still haven't played, but, you know, I'm sure it's good for those of you who like a challenge. It seems like there could be, I mean, one of the things to me, it seems like, is that Nintendo might be slightly out of touch, especially when it comes to the Wii U. Like, I look at IGN and Game Informer and, you know, sites and publications that deal with, you know, like all video games in general. And Nintendo is hardly ever mentioned. Even though, you know, Nintendo has great games coming out, it's just rarely talked about. And I think that a lot of that is lack of third-party support for the Wii U. But,
well, when you're releasing first-party, major first-party titles on a console, like in almost every 2 to 3 months, whatever, I mean, yeah, you're going to have that problem on there. I mean, when Nintendo had announced that they were only going to do another, like, a streaming-only event this year, you know, media jumped, like, my fellow members of the media, like, video game media jumped on this, were, you know, felt betrayed, or they felt like, you know, they're ignoring them for this. I'm like, and my only reason was it's just a reason to whine about it. I mean, yeah, you don't get that glitz and glamour from usual press conferences and that live crowd reactions like I've seen in years past. But I think it has to do with the fact that, you know, the journalists don't get that first scoop that they want for their sites, those website traffic, those clicks, like that they, you know, desire on there. But it's, you're still getting this information out that everybody's at the same time, though. But it's, I think that's what it kind of comes down to, but, yeah, it's a lot of overreaction on part, but again, I'm not being, you know, stubborn, like, you know, well, not stubborn, but, ignoring the fact that, you know, Nintendo does have some problems right now with the Wii U, which it does. I mean, a friend of mine always jokes at me, whatever, since I'm telling him, what have you been playing on your Wii U? He's like, oh, you know, I've been playing a couple of eShop titles. He's like, and he would joke, oh, yeah, you and the 200 other people that actually own the console. I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I'll take a, you know, kind of, I'll take jabs, basically, at the Wii U, but at the same time, I want you to buy it. Just buy it already, people. But, you know, whatever. So,
it's, E3 will be interesting to see how they respond to this type of, like, you know, financial news.
Yeah, I've just, for the past couple of years, been hoping, dying to be blown away somehow by Nintendo's E3, but I've actually been quite disappointed over the last couple of years. So I just really, really hope that I get blown away for once by Nintendo's E3. But we shall see. It'll be interesting to see how things unfold from here on out. Moving on, we are pretty much done with Nintendo news up to that point. And so we'll just move right on to our feature, which we're talking about the history of Mario Kart. So there are currently 7 Mario Kart games that have been released, not counting the arcade versions. And so we're just going to talk about, you know, the history of Mario Kart, our favorite games, maybe like the first game that we played, our favorite items, characters, things like that. And so let's just start with, like, our favorite game. Actually, no, let's start with an easier question. The first Mario Kart game that you ever played or that you ever just really fell in love with. So, Harrison.
It's going to have to be 64. It's the one that I always go back to and one that was always in my college dorm rooms or we had friends' parties and stuff to play around with. And yet another good addition to it, but it was still simple in design. You know, back, well, now it is. It's simple in design, even though when you look at the character sprites on there, they're actually 2D, whereas the environments are 3D. When you kind of look at sort of the racers, that's one thing as far as design. It's kind of like, it's not really 3D as far as the character models. They're just 2D, but they take the sprites to shift, like how they shift on, like, the course. But, no, it's this is one that kind of just boosted up the kart racing genre for in the realm of 3D gaming. And to that day, it still goes above and beyond, and how that game still carries a lot of weight. But as far as my second favorite one, it has to be Double Dash. Well, no, not Double Dash. It had to be Mario Kart Wii, mainly because it gave probably Nintendo's only almost lag-free, streamlined online community that I would still play to this day, until the servers were down.
Okay. I'm afraid I would not put Mario Kart Wii that high up on my list. I really liked it during its time. I thought it was a really great multiplayer game, but I could never really take it seriously. When I would play with my brothers, they would take it really seriously and they got first place. I mean, it's not often that my brothers are better than me at a video game, but they were definitely better than me with Mario Kart Wii because they took it so seriously. I just could not find it in me to take it seriously because of the balance issues. I feel like it's just such a hectic, chaotic game, and the inclusion of some overpowered items just kind of threw the balance off for me. And going back to Mario Kart Wii, I am not a huge fan of it.
Why is that? Is it just because it didn't really add much from what Double Dash, or went back to the usual one cart per, the one cart person, one character per cart, system that was away from Double Dash in the home console? Or was it just you felt like they didn't really add much, or the fact that when racing in the game, going from first to last was just chaotic?
Option C. Was that three different options? Yeah.
Yes, by the way.
Just the sheer chaos of it. So I recently posted on Infendo a YouTube video, the honest trailer for Mario Kart.
Oh, I
haven't seen it.
I know, I have seen it. The guy who does the voice for that is the same voiceover guy for Honest Trailers and Screen Junkies, and it's pretty hilarious. I mean, one thing he does mention is like, it's like, see something since Mario, like they, like, you know, whore out their characters all the time. Doesn't matter, and sound of a cash register, money.
You're gonna buy the next one anyway. Come on. That's what he says there. Actually, the line I was thinking of from that is, it's near the beginning of the Honest trailer. He says, Mario Kart, the franchise where being the best racer and getting first place don't always go hand in hand. And for Mario Kart Wii, I think Mario Kart Wii is the biggest culprit when it comes to that. I feel like no matter how good of a racer you are, there's just not a huge chance. You have to try again and again and again sometimes just to get, you know, first place in a certain race that you're wanting to get, like a gold medal. I don't know if it's medals or what in that game, but just trophies. We'll just stick with trophies. I think that's the most commonly used one. But yeah, I just did not like the balance, or, you know, the balance issues in that game kind of bothered me. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that Double Dash had, you know, two-man carts and Mario Kart Wii didn't, because I actually did not play a lot of Double Dash, unfortunately. I borrowed it once. Played, several races, but I don't hardly remember anything about the game. Except that, you know, it was pretty fun. But as far as probably the first Mario Kart game I played and the first one I fell in love with are the exact same one. And mine is also actually Mario Kart 64. That one just kind of lives on in all of our hearts, I think. To me, that is Mario Kart 64 is like the reason that I like playing racing games at all. I mean, I don't play a lot of different racing series of games, but I do love Mario Kart, and I do like the idea of racing games because Mario Kart 64 was just so much fun. I would battle for like hours on end, it felt like, with my friends, you know, Balloon Battle. And it's just a fantastic game.
Balloon Battle was a good little diversion for me from the usual cup races, but but is there a Mario Kart that you just disliked, or is the Wii version the one that you said you just disliked?
I would say the Wii version has to be that one that I just dislike. I think I wouldn't like Super Mario Kart, you know, the first Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. I don't think I'd like that one much, just because I've never played it. It would be a little archaic, and I don't think I would like it much, unfortunately.
It's simple by its standards, whatever. But like looking back at new title, like the current titles, but it's one I haven't really gone back to play a lot. But it was one I did rent frequently as a little kid. But as far as my least favorite, I did play a lot of Mario Kart Super Circuit on my Game Boy Advance. I did. I played a lot of that. But looking back at it, I still think that's the weakest entry, just because I think it played it too safe to the Mario formula. Because it stuck basically to what Mario Kart 64 had, but it just kind of went two steps backward and just kind of reverted back to, just restructured back to what it originally was. You know, you use coins to go collect coins to go faster, and I think that there weren't any additions to, like, power, like, you know, items or power-ups. I don't even think the blue shell was in Mario Kart Super Circuit. I mean, again, readers, correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a long while since I played it.
I'd probably agree with that. For those of you who don't know, Mario Kart Super Circuit was on the Game Boy Advance. It was the first handheld entry in the Mario Kart series, but yeah, I think maybe that's part of the reason that it was kind of almost uninspired, is just because you're going from Mario Kart 64 to, like, the first Mario Kart game for a handheld system, and so, I don't know, there probably wasn't a lot of, you know, room for the developers to add a whole ton to the formula. But then again, you've got Mario Kart DS, which was the first Mario Kart that featured online gameplay, and
I have a confession to make. I have not played Mario Kart DS or Mario Kart 7. I have not played either.
Oh man, those are like two of my favorites. I love Mario Kart 7 and Mario Kart DS. You'd kind of expect it to be a little bit like Mario Kart Super Circuit. But even though you're confined to just using the D-pad to steer in Mario Kart DS, it still is a really tight control experience. I have been shocked at how smoothly that game plays. And, you know, you can't ignore the fact that it was the first one to offer online play. And as for Mario Kart 7, especially after Mario Kart Wii, I was just blown away by Mario Kart 7. The gliding and the underwater sections were great, but the real thing that I love about this game is just the tightness of the control. I think that with Mario Kart Wii, when I got Mario Kart Wii, I was totally all about embracing the Wii remote, and so I would use the Wii remote by itself to steer, you know, use motion control. And I think that that's actually kind of an imprecise way to control Mario Kart, and so moving to Mario Kart 7 for me was just fantastic. It just feels like the smoothest gameplay experience on the 3DS, I would say, actually. I love going back to it even today. And as long as Mario Kart 8, I'm not going to make the same mistake as I made with Mario Kart Wii, so when Mario Kart 8 comes out, I will not be using motion controls at all. I'll just be using the standard stick and buttons and...
Are you going to use the pro controller, or are you going to use the pro controller, or are you going to use the gamepad?
I'm planning on using the gamepad. I've actually found that the gamepad, this is probably because I play with it more often than I play with any other controller, but the gamepad to me is just really comfortable. The Wii U Pro controller is set up basically the same way, but I feel like the face buttons, A, B, and X, and Y, I feel like they're, like, harder to reach with my thumb on the Wii U Pro controller.
Yeah, that and the fact that it's like you have both analog sticks on the top as opposed to, you know, at an angle. That itself, very hard to control, like, on first-person shooters. But this is, I don't know, I think I want to go back to the Wiimote control, whatever, controls for what I did on the Wii. But I may just experiment a little bit on each version.
Well, I don't think I properly express my feelings about this, but I truly am appalled that you haven't played Mario Kart DS, at least.
I know. There's a lot of DS games I missed out on, and I'm not going to list them on there, just because I was broke back then, and I couldn't afford a lot of games back then, so my Wii or my GameCube got top billing.
Yeah, we all have phases like that. I was, you know, when the Wii U first came out, it was my first year away from home at college, and there was no chance in the world I was going to get one just with my own funds, and I wasn't able to get one for Christmas either. And so it wasn't, you know, it was the January, I believe, or the, not January, but the like July after the Wii U was released that I actually managed to get my hands on one. So yeah, we all go through those phases, but I would definitely recommend getting Mario Kart DS like as soon as possible, and possibly Mario Kart 7. I love both of those games.
But we're only a few, about a week or about less than 2 weeks away from Mario Kart 8, so...
Actually, I think it's less than 3 weeks. It's 20 days from now.
You're right, yep, you're correct. Yeah, you're correct. I'm bad at math right now on this show.
It's all right. The only reason that I, you know, that came to my head so quickly is because I am so excited for it, and I'm actually planning kind of a big Mario Kart 8 game night the day after it comes out, and so I have that to look forward to.
Yeah, I gotta get extra Wiimotes and extra Pro Controllers, so gotta get that all taken care of.
Yeah, I've got one Pro Controller, planning on buying one more. That is gonna have to be enough. I'm thinking that plenty of people who come will just be content to still steer with the Wii Remote by itself. Kind of moving on, let's talk about characters, playable characters.
What, my favorite one?
Yeah.
Well,
just
my
throw something out
go-to.
There.
Go-to's always Yoshi.
Ah, okay. Yoshi's always a favorite, and so is Luigi. Neither of those characters I'm, like, a huge fan of, I have to admit.
I always stayed to the standard ones that I'd seen from, like, Mario Kart 64 as my go-to characters. I mean, everything else, I mean, haven't really played as anything else. Like, in the various versions, it was always circled between Toad, Mario, and Yoshi. But Yoshi was just always my go-to one. Whenever I'm always upset when I have game nights and my friend always pick Yoshi, and I'm like, give him a death stare. I'm like, you don't realize, you have no idea what you just did.
When I was little, my go-to character for Mario Kart 64 was Toad. Mario was kind of a secondary character, just because when I was little, I, you know, thought I had this fantastic logic when I thought that it's called Mario Kart 64, so I'm going to be Mario, and I'm sure I'll beat everybody. That's how young I was when I played that game, I guess, But nowadays, I'm really into using Rosalina, actually. I just, I'm a huge fan of good characters, you know. And as far as the Mario series is concerned, there's a huge cast of colorful characters associated with the Mario universe. But none of them, you know, they're all pretty shallow characters as far as, you know, like storylines go and things like that. Rosalina, her backstory and just her character in general in Mario Kart, or not Mario Kart, but Super Mario Galaxy, that just blew me away for some reason. And so I've always been like a big Rosalina fan, and I'll use her. And due to the fact that I use her, I'm kind of partial to using large class characters, because, you know, there's three classes of characters, small, medium, and large. And Rosalina just happens to be large. So I've just kind of associated myself with the large class of characters in Mario Kart. But yeah, when it comes to Mario Kart, it's not like Super Smash Bros., where in Super Smash Bros., who you pick, I mean, it pretty much determines your whole gameplay style. It's not really the same in Mario Kart. You can basically just go with anybody, and the game is still the same. It's still fun, of course, but mostly it's just for looks. And, you know, if you like the personality of the character, that works too. So, but yeah, we have our favorites anyway. So as far as items are concerned, do you have a personal favorite item?
I like the infinity, it's not the speed mushroom, but it's the one that's the golden mushroom that you can use to speed up a little bit more multiple times. That was always a favorite of mine, but hated? Yeah, blue shell.
Most hated blue shell. Pretty much everybody on the planet probably feels that way.
Yeah, the tyranny of that is about to end thanks to the horn item, so.
Yeah, hopefully that'll, my concern with that, with the super horn, is that the player in first place, and that's, you know, who the spiny shell targets. Like, what are the odds that they're going to get a super horn? But, you know, any chance of additional balance being added to the Mario Kart formula, that's good news to me, and so that's good. As far as my favorite character or items go, I actually like your choice of the golden mushroom, because it's not just an item that, I mean, for example, the lightning. You just, like, hit the lightning button and everyone shrinks and it's just, you know, it's easy as that. With this, with the golden mushroom, you actually have to also have a little bit of skill as you're using it. And so that's actually a very good choice as far as items are concerned. I feel like I tend to lean toward the red shell as my favorite item, but again, that's just one that you shoot off and it will most likely hit somebody, and so that's good. But I just like shells in general, so the green shell is also a good one. I like the skill that is also involved in using a green shell. You actually have to aim it, and so that's a good item. When I'm in last place, my favorite item would probably be the lightning. I just like seeing the lightning strike and thinking, like, yes, now's my chance. And so that was a good one, especially when I was little and I wasn't very good at the game. And I'd play with my older brothers and sisters, and of course they would cream me. And so, But yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't know. Favorite feature. Like, a lot of the Mario Kart games, of course, like, add features to the formula. So what's your favorite kind of new idea?
Well, even though this hasn't been new, but I mean, online in Mario Kart DS and onwards to, which was expanded upon in Mario Kart Wii, because I feel like, again, this has been something that's been needed for a series like that, and to see it done so well in the Wii version with such an atrocious collection of online titles, yeah, it worked out pretty well for as far as when it came to matchmaking and just able to jump into a race whenever you want to.
Yeah, Mario Kart 7 is the same way, except they kind of refined the online experience even further for Mario Kart 7. I was always a huge fan of the communities feature in Mario Kart 7, where you can just, like, create a community, it gives you a code, and then you give your code out to all your friends and say, like, hey, let's, you know, meet up in this community and race. We had an Infendo community for a long time, and that was always a lot of fun to race in for as long as it lasted. I was the reigning champion for a long time, and, you know, people got really excited when they beat me. They would comment on the post saying, like, oh my gosh, I beat Holly, and other people would be like, oh my gosh, I haven't raced Holly, I can't wait to race her. So that was always really fun, and I'm looking forward to the online features of Mario Kart 8. There are a couple of people who are pretty convinced that they'll be able to beat me in Mario Kart 8, but if you're listening to this, don't count on it. That's all I have to say there. As far as features for me, though, I'm not sure if I can actually pick one. If I had to, I'd probably just pick Mario Kart 7, gliding. Gliding sections in Mario Kart 7 are actually quite a lot of fun. Underwater sections are okay, but, you know, they're basically just, like, racing, only the physics are a little bit different, and so that's just pretty basic. But gliding actually created kind of a variety to the levels that was much appreciated by me. I think that basically kind of concludes our feature on the history of Mario Kart. Our favorite games, items, characters, features, whatever. And with that, we are done with the show.
But we did mention something in the... we wanted to mention on here. Holly did hosted the show by herself last week. We were kind of promised an E3 prediction show in here, but since Lewis couldn't join us again because he's just moved into a new house and has no internet, we figured we wanted to save that for him. Like, you know, discuss our predictions with him. And probably as we get a little closer when E3 comes up, which is, by the way, a month away today.
Yeah. Get excited, everybody.
Excited for possible disappointment or jubilant celebration.
Yes, indeed. It's kind of exciting to kind of anticipate whatever it's going to be. It's going to be surprising in some way, I'm guessing, and so it should be a fun show.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to send us a question that we can answer in a future show, send an email to contact@infendo.com. You can also just leave a comment on the post if you are listening to the show in your web browser. And with that, we're done. See you, everybody.
Later, everybody.
Ba-ba-bum. We're done.